This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Are you feeling lucky, Pilgrim? There's a growing wave of unease, even panic. Our fossil fuel civilization may be accelerating straight off the cliff of mass extinction. Will the rapid rise in Arctic temperatures and the disappearance of summer sea ice trigger a runaway climate change and a mass extinction event? You would think a possibility so huge would fill television news and newspapers. What are political candidates saying or business leaders? Everyone must be talking about the chance we could be killed off within a generation or two. No, the silence is deafening. Right now, this debate is sealed off into a strong talk among scientists and a small group of journalists and concerned citizens. You'll have to go to blogs like realclimate.org or Climate Progress to find the discussion or listen to Radio EcoShock. What is the problem? New science shows 7 of 13 major feedback mechanisms, those forces that create climate tipping points, are found in the Arctic. We'll talk to the lead author of that paper, award-winning scientist Carlos Duarte. One of those frightening developments is the discovery by a joint Russian-American research expedition that large plumes of methane are escaping into the atmosphere from the Arctic seabed along eastern Siberia. Scientists Natalia Shakova and Igor Semilyatov suggest a burst of 50 gigatons of methane could result from, quote, an abrupt release at any time, end quote. That would multiply current methane levels by about 12 times with, quote, consequent catastrophic greenhouse warming, end quote. As a result, a combination of scientists, journalists, and other concerned people have formed the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. They call for an immediate war-scale geoengineering effort to save the last of the Arctic sea ice cover, and so save our climate. In this program, I interview one of the world's top ice experts, Dr. Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University. He warns the Arctic Sea could become virtually ice-free in September as early as 2015, just 3 years from now. We may already be seeing the destabilizing results of this loss of Arctic climate regulator, the sea ice, in the mild, almost snowless winter in North America, while Arctic cold pushed deep into Europe and even North Africa in the late winter of 2012. Dr. David Archer from the University of Chicago thinks the warnings of a catastrophe from the Arctic melting of methane are either overblown or miss the real and known threat. You know, the threat you and I create every day as we participate in ever-increasing emissions of carbon dioxide by burning fossil fuels. Don't miss our interview with David Archer, a famous climate expert, and his dark dare about a methane burst. I'm Alex Smith. The risk is huge. The outcome could determine the lives of my children and grandchildren. I've lost sleep already, and I fail to cover the important angles in this program. I know it's not complete. The story is so big it will take many shows over many months to cover it. As long as I am able, I will keep trying, and I hope you will too. We'll start out with an overview of the Arctic tipping points with Dr. Carlos Duarte. In 2012, the winter weather in America was unusually mild. Winter festivals and outdoor skating were canceled while New Yorkers played tennis in the park. At the same time, after a warmer-than-usual winter, Eastern Europe suddenly plunged into cold that killed dozens of people. Something seems different. Our guest, Professor Carlos Duarte, may shed some light on this. His new paper, published in the Journal of the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, warns about developing tipping points in the Arctic. Professor Duarte is the director of the Oceans Institute at the University of Western Australia, and he is a professor of research with the Spanish National Research Council. Last year, he won the prestigious Prix d'Excellence, awarded by the International Council for the Exploration of the Sea. Professor Duarte, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us, but how does a professor in Australia, Western Australia, and the Mediterranean come to study the Arctic?
Well, my research is actually global in nature. This year I led, last year I led a circumnavigation expedition, so we spent 7 months sailing the world's oceans, trying to better understand the impacts of climate change on the oceans and explore the deep sea. I've led 7 expeditions to Antarctica, and I've in my 9th expedition to the Arctic. And I believe that regardless where we live, whether Australia, whether Vancouver or elsewhere, the Arctic and the changes there are of fundamental importance to everybody's well-being.
Well, you raise a good point, because most of us never see the far north. There's no big cities there, no TV news stations. But I've had several scientists tell me here on Radio EcoShock that the Arctic may regulate the climate of the world. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. The more we understand about the mechanisms that trigger changes in the Earth system, the more this points to the Arctic as being a critical element in the whole balance of the Earth system. Recently, one of my co-authors in the articles you are referring to published a very influential paper about tipping elements in the Earth system and identified 30 mechanisms or elements around the world that, if set off balance, can induce very abrupt changes in the whole Earth system and the climate. And out of those 13 elements, 7 are located in the Arctic region. So by all accounts, the Arctic region is where the triggers that can induce abrupt changes in at the planetary scale are located. And therefore, we should be particularly concerned in understanding what sets those mechanisms in motion and whether they have already started to show signs of being in change.
So 7 out of 13 possible tipping points are in the Arctic. Did I understand you correctly?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, recently I looked at a map of temperatures at the top of the world, as we call it, and over the pole it was a balmy 24 degrees Fahrenheit. That's only -4 Celsius, and that's much warmer than I would expect in early February there. How much has the Arctic warmed?
Well, the Arctic has warmed 3 times faster than the rest of the world, and since 1980, the rate of warming has been an incredible 1 degree per decade. So since 1980, the Arctic has warmed by 3 degrees, whereas the rest of the planet has warmed by less than half a degree. So this really points at the speed of changes in the Arctic, and even though we should be careful in interpreting weather and not confounding it with climate, indeed, one of the predictions of the consequence of the changes in the Arctic is that the changes in atmospheric circulation will lead to warmer Arctic winters and very cold spells of weather in the northern hemisphere.
And that's something I don't really understand, though. Why does the Arctic warm so much more than the rest of the world where we live?
Well, there are different reasons for that, and one of the reasons for this is that much of the warming in the Arctic is actually driven by changes in oceanic circulation, and the warm Atlantic waters are penetrating deeper and deeper into the Arctic Ocean, and therefore exchanging heat with the atmosphere, and also the reduction in the cover of ice changes the albedo, or the reflection of solar radiation. When the Arctic is fully covered by ice, 90% of the radiance is reflected into the space. But when the ice cover is reduced, then instead of reflecting 90% of the solar radiation, the open ocean absorbs 60%, and therefore there's higher input of heat that is accumulated in the sea. And as the surface of the cover of ice in the Arctic has been severely and dramatically reduced over the past years, then the influx of heat into the Arctic Ocean has increased greatly. And even though the Arctic remains covered by ice in the winter time there is no light anyway, because it's in the dark period of the high Arctic, and therefore whether it is covered by ice or not doesn't really affect. The albedo is not playing a role, but in fact, in that situation, the ice cover actually helps reduce heat loss from the oceans into the atmosphere. So all of the elements are playing to render the heat flux of the Arctic one that is changing very rapidly, and that accounts for most of the steep warming in the Arctic.
Professor Carlos Duarte, in your recent scientific paper published with your team in the journal Ambio and Nature Climate Change, you did talk, as we've mentioned, about passing multiple climate tipping points. Could you take a few minutes, if you will, and just tell us what those tipping points are in the Arctic?
Well, the main tipping point in the Arctic is the change to an Arctic Ocean in the summer devoid of ice cover. And it's really this one tipping point which we're likely to trespass within the next two decades that will set the other tipping elements in motion. And those other tipping elements are already starting to move. One of them is an increased discharge of fresh water. There's been an increase in the discharge of fresh water to the Arctic by 30%. From both melting of ice caps and permafrost in the Arctic, but also increased moisture and precipitation. So there's been already an increase in the discharge of fresh water that is leading to changes in ocean circulation, first in the Arctic, but also these changes propagate across the rest of the oceans and may upset regional climates because these ocean currents are an important mechanism for heat transport and modulating climate at the regional level. Then one of the second elements is precisely like we discussed earlier, is the change in the albedo and the change in the radiative budget and the heat budget of the whole Arctic because of the loss of the reflective ice cover and the increased absorption of solar radiation and heat by the ocean. We have also evidence that the ice cap in Greenland is melting at an accelerated rate, and that will increase also the discharge of fresh water, but it will also be an important element of the acceleration of sea level rise globally. But perhaps the two elements that might be most disturbing, because they might reinforce human impacts way beyond the power of our direct impact, is the effect of these changes in the release of greenhouse gases. And there's two sources of greenhouse gases stored in the Arctic that may be released in the atmosphere. One is the methane hydrates, which are methane molecules that are retained in frozen soils and shallow sediments. And as these soils thaw and the shallow sediments thaw, then this methane can be released into the atmosphere and accelerate the rise of greenhouse gas effect in the atmosphere. And similarly, the dieback of the boreal forest that is already ongoing and the desiccation of peat in the boreal region and therefore the subsequent fires on the peat deposits can also lead to loss of carbon sink capacity in the case of the forest dieback, but also important and significant releases of greenhouse gases from the burning of peat and the fires in Russia in the summer of 2010 were already one of these cases of peat fires because of a desiccation due to high temperatures.
I'm glad you raised the issue of peat because we did have a Canadian fire expert talking about that, and it's just something that people are less aware of. But the thing that there has been a lot in sort of environmental press has been the alarm about the methane hydrates escaping from shallow seas in eastern Siberia. There was a joint Russian-American expedition just recently to measure that. And there's been some discussion back and forth between climate scientists about how serious that risk is, whether we might get a sudden rise in temperature due to Arctic methane releases. How do you see it?
Well, in our paper, we evaluate the likelihood of each of these elements showing an abrupt change and maybe inducing abrupt changes in the climate system. And even though the deposits and the stores of methane are of significant magnitude, and if released in an accelerated manner, they could really deliver a significant blow to the climate system, we conclude that we are likely to see more like a chronic increased release rather than an accelerated burst of methane. So this is likely to have an effect on the balance of greenhouse gases, but not one that will show an abrupt change in the near decades.
All right. Well, Carlos Duarte, the very same oil companies who contribute to rapid climate change in the Arctic now plan to flock there to drill some more oil. I've heard even China, Brazil, and India want to place claims on the Arctic. What have you seen or what have you heard about this new resource rush?
Well, there is to some extent much of a gold rush in the Arctic. There's gold in both as well and diamonds, but most of the tensions and the gold rush is about gas and oil, as you mentioned, but also about the business of navigation across and maritime transport across the Arctic. And as you well know, Canada and the U.S. have some issues regarding the international or national status of the Northwest Passage. And the business and the economic value of the traffic of goods and materials across the Arctic is actually quite large. But it is somehow and somewhat disappointing that the countries involved in the Arctic region are more focused on the benefits that can be derived from an improved access to the Arctic than really in considering the impacts that the change in the Arctic may have for their citizens and also for the world at large. So I don't think that the response we're seeing from political leaders in the region, which is to extract more oil, extract more carbon, and burn more fossil fuels, is actually going to make the problem any better.
And what about the people who already live in the polar regions, in our case, the Inuit? How will rapid change affect them?
They've already been affected by rapid climate change, and the Inuit culture and people is a culture and society that have adapted to very harsh climatic conditions and changes in climate over time. But the speed of the changes that they're experiencing now is probably faster than what they have been able to adapt to the past, and they've already impacted because their traditional transport routes in the winter are being affected. The ice is now much thinner and is not reliable to support the transport either by dog sleds or skidoos, and also their distance to travel to the hunting grounds with ice in the summer is becoming farther and farther, and continue to do traditional hunting becomes a challenge. And also some of the traditional settlements were established on the permafrost, and as the permafrost thaw, then some of the settlements have to be relocated several hundred kilometers away from their traditional location, and that is already impinging on a society and a culture that is a challenge already to adapt to a world that is dominated by Western cultures. So definitely one of the most impacted people on Earth are definitely the Inuit.
And we've heard somewhat about the plight of polar bears, but are people also studying the changes in plant life as the Arctic warms?
Yes, absolutely. Both plant life on land, but also the plant life in the ocean. We have evidence of an increased spread of algae and seagrass into the Arctic region, mostly through Greenland, but also there are changes in the plankton community that might have important effects in the potential role of the ocean as a carbon sink and might actually be reverting to a carbon source with the changes in the algae that thrive in the Arctic Ocean.
What kind of research are you planning or are you thinking that we need now that we know a little bit about the Arctic?
Well, what we pledge in one of our papers, the one in Nature Climate Change, is that rather than arguing whether the Arctic is changing or not, whether it's natural or not, which I believe is an argument for which the evidence is already compelling, we should be developing observational programs and techniques to infer whether we are approaching a tipping point. And if we are, then we also need to be doing research and taking measures to increase the resilience and the resistance of society and ecosystems to the abrupt changes that might be induced by the ongoing changes in the Arctic.
And for those who want to follow up, could you tell us the title of your new paper?
The title of the new paper, the one in AMBIO is called Tipping Points in the Arctic Marine Ecosystem. And the title of the paper in Nature Climate Change is Abrupt Climate Change in the Arctic.
Very good. Are there other resources you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, there's a web page from the National Snow and Ice Data Center in the U.S. that provides data, figures, and even daily estimates of the condition ice and the extent of sea ice in the Arctic, and that's a good resource to understand better the changes in the ice and the snow cover and the drivers of these changes globally.
We have been speaking with Professor Carlos Duarte, the director of the Oceans Institute at the University of Western Australia and a research professor for the Spanish National Research Council. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. This is Radio EcoShock. We're kicking off a serious look into the biggest problem humanity has ever faced. Will we lose the climate we depend on? If so, how much time remains to save ourselves? The big developments may not be happening in cities with news media where you live, but in the hostile far reaches of the Arctic tundra and the polar sea. In 2007, the summer sea ice melted back so far. Scientists were shocked, their jaws dropped, and they worried as never before. Next, we talk with the lifelong expert on sea ice, Dr. Peter Wadhams of Cambridge. Our guest is one of the leading scientists in the Arctic and especially in Arctic ice research. In the UK, Peter Wadhams is professor of ocean physics and head of the Polar Ocean Physics Group at the University of Cambridge. He is president of the International Association for the Physical Sciences of the Ocean Commission on Sea Ice, and he's a member of too many Arctic study projects to mention here, and also an award-winning person and scientist. Professor Wadhams, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Pleasure.
Peter, a recent article in the Independent newspaper names changes in the Arctic sea ice as a possible cause of the great freeze-up in Europe this winter. How would that work?
Well, there's a very large shortage of ice in the Barents Sea at the moment. Normally, the ice edge in winter in the Barents Sea is advancing westwards, but at the moment, there's an extremely large area of open water. And this obviously leads to a great amount of heat loss from the ocean to the atmosphere. And this is thought to be one, it could be a factor which is influencing the pattern of atmospheric pressure, which is sending Arctic air down into Europe. I mean, it's not a clear connection, but the fact that there's such an extreme amount of open water and Europe is getting such an unusually large amount of Arctic air could be linked.
Yes, no, it is strange because, on the other hand, I've seen maps showing higher than normal temperatures in the polar region this winter, and we've had an almost non-existent winter in North America. Could changes in the Arctic lead to still more weather instability, do you think?
Well, that is one of the predictions of climate models. I mean, you can't, a particular weather event, you should be cautious about ascribing it to climate change. What you have to look at are long-term averages and changes in those. But along with the changes in long-term averages, like changes in the average sea ice extent, changes in average air temperatures, there are predicted to be a greater number of extremes, that extreme temperatures, extreme storm events like currents of hurricanes, these are predicted to be more frequent as the climate changes and warms up.
And what is your specialty, really? What do you do that you really enjoy and that you think is important?
Well, I've been working really all my life, I suppose, on sea ice in the Arctic. In fact, I started out working in Canada on these problems. And the various aspects that we're studying include looking at the motion of the sea ice, the growth of the sea ice, and we're also measuring its thickness, and we've been doing so for a very long time, from submarines, and so we build up a picture of how the distribution of thickness in the Arctic changes with time over a period of more than 30 years, and this is what's giving us really the rather frightening information that the thickness is now only about half what it was 30 years ago.
And one of the big debates is, when will the Arctic be more or less ice-free in the summer? What is new information telling us about this?
Well, it looks as if this is going to be very close. The extent of ice in the summer, it's easy to measure what the area of ice is in the Arctic because you have all kinds of satellites that show you that. The difficulty is measuring how thick it is, and that's where we've been able to get data from submarines. And if you add in the submarine data to the extent data so that you're turning area into volume, you multiply the area by the thickness, then the decline in volume has been much more dramatic than the decline in area. In other words, the Arctic sea ice has been retreating, but it's kind of holding out a bit, but it's been thinning as well. And at a certain point, the thinning and the retreat will interact with one another and the whole thing will collapse. And the predictions are really based on the trends up to now that the summer sea ice will collapse within the next 2 or 3 years, and we might see an ice-free Arctic Ocean in summer, in September, within about 3 years of now.
And what would that mean for the world?
Well, it would, for practical things, it would make it a lot easier to navigate across the Arctic Ocean. Shipping would be able to cross the Arctic and also go through the northwest and northeast passages more easily. Offshore exploration and oil production would have a longer season. So there's practical things that might be thought to be beneficial, but the problems as far as the climate are concerned is that it will greatly accelerate the rate of global warming, because the shrinkage of the sea ice is extending the area of open water, which absorbs most of the solar radiation that falls on it, has a low albedo, and that gives you a positive feedback to global warming. So we might expect global warming to proceed much more rapidly, and we already know that it's proceeding faster in high latitudes than in low latitudes. So Canada, for instance, Canada and Russia are getting about twice as much warming as the low latitudes of the world. So the unstable nature of that, which is causing a lot of climatic instabilities, melt of permafrost and so on, that's going to cause really increased problems, and those problems are going to be especially severe for high latitude regions.
And are we heading towards the famous tipping point where climate changes could develop that are beyond human control?
There's lots of possible tipping points for different climatic parameters, but I do suspect we're at one or past one for sea ice, because I don't think sea ice can now go back to the way it was 20 or 30 years ago. Then you had a lot of the ice in the Arctic was many years old. It was called multi-year ice. It was very heavy ice. It circulated within the Arctic Ocean. It got thicker and thicker every year. It was really tough stuff to get through with an icebreaker. But the multi-year ice is disappearing out of the Arctic because the wind patterns are changing as well and driving the ice out. It's not growing as thick in a winter, and more of it's melting in the summer. And so the Arctic is becoming a first-year ice zone, and before long it will become, like the Antarctic, a seasonal ice zone. So you'll have ice in the winter all over the Arctic Ocean, but fairly thin first-year ice, and then in the summer that'll all go away like it does in the Antarctic, and you'll have open water with lots of consequences there, including melt of permafrost, lots of additional damage to coastal settlements, because there'll be much more, the open water will allow bigger waves to be generated in storms, so you have coastal erosion, but lots of problems that you associate with the open sea that you thought you would never have to contend with in the Arctic will now be coming along.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and when we return, I'll ask Professor Peter Wadhams about the recent discovery of methane plumes rising out of the polar seabed.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
We'll be right back in just a minute with more Radio EcoShock.